Did you know that the more you use your Android phone, the more junk it accumulates? Yeah, that's right. Many of your favorite apps, like Facebook, save all their photos, messages, browsing history, and other data directly to your phone. Apps usually hide these things to keep from downloading them again later. But over time, this just eats away at the limited disk space you've got on your phone. And your phone slows down and you get angry. But there's an easy fix for that. AVG Cleaner. AVG Cleaner is a free app that you can download right now from Google Play. It not only cleans all the hidden junk from your phone, but it helps give you longer battery life, too. That's right. AVG Cleaner not only gives you back your disk space, it improves your battery life and does it all for free. So download AVG Cleaner from Google Play. When you launch it, you'll see a really simple screen that shows you how much space is left on your phone and how much space you can get back. From there, you can do some really amazing things, like clean up the hidden junk with just one tap. Or sort all your apps by how often you use them, how much battery they use, how much mobile data they use, or how much space they take up on your phone. Then you can easily remove the ones that aren't worth keeping. You can also see a breakdown of your battery life to know how much time you've got left for talking, watching movies, and surfing the web. But that's not everything. You also get quick, all-in-one access to phone settings like Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and more, so you can disable anything that's draining your battery. And best of all, you can turn on Auto Clean, and AVG Cleaner will do all the work for you. Just tell it what you want removed, and it will clean up the junk for you on a daily or weekly basis, automatically. It does everything but make a sandwich for you. What more could you ask for in a free app? AVG Cleaner already has millions of downloads on Google Play, and because it comes from AVG, you know it works. AVG are the same people who brought you AVG Antivirus, the first antivirus app on Google Play to reach 100 million downloads. Go to Google Play and search for AVG Cleaner, then download and use it. Your Android phone or tablet will be cleaner and run more smoothly in no time flat. And you'll get more battery life, too. AVG Cleaner. Download it now for free. That's AVG Cleaner.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
I'm glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you empowering yourself with knowledge so you can keep more of what you make. Our number, 877-87-CLARK. ClarkHoward.com is the website. And follow me on Facebook at Facebook.com/ClarkHoward. Today's Clarkrageous Moment is about some of the biggest banks in the country cheating our brave men and women of the U.S. military. When you hear what I have to tell you in today's Clarkrageous Moment, it will make you sick to your stomach. And coming up a half hour from now, a positive story about banks, a new way for you to use an ATM without putting your money at risk. It is something that's a breakthrough in the United States, but has already been used overseas for a while. I want to talk about something that was a big news item a couple of weeks ago, and it's about a settlement that Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian reached with the Attorney General of the state of New York, but agreed to follow the settlement in all 50 states. We're getting a lot of questions about that agreement in our off-air center, our Team Clark Consumer Action Center, where you can get free off-the-air advice 9 hours a day, and a lot of confusion, so I want to clarify. So here's the deal. Under the settlement that was reached, if you have medical debts, which is about half of what fouls up people's credit, you will be under a whole new regime as far as medical debt ruining your credit. So there's been confusion about how these provisions work. So let me see if I can explain it in the simplest terms. Let's take someone who has health insurance. And you go to a doctor, you have a lab test, or you're having a procedure, or you end up in the hospital. Bills come from every which direction. And addresses may be wrong in somebody's system or whatever. The bill never gets to you. The first you would know about it under the old system is when you find out your credit's ruined, that an unpaid medical bill got on your credit report, or that a bill collector calls you about an unpaid medical bill that you never knew about. There's no way, if you have a complicated procedure, you're ever going to know all the bills that it's going to generate and from whom. So that is such a reality. And the truth is that unpaid medical bills of this nature can ruin your credit for 7 years, but there's no correlation between that unpaid medical bill and how you pay bills generally. So under the new system, a medical bill that's past due will not reflect on your credit report for basically 6 months. It will give time for a bill to find its way to you. Even if it ends up being turned over to a collector, it still will not end up on your credit if that bill is settled within 6 months. Now, it's going to take some time for all the credit reporting mechanisms to catch up to this change, but not a terribly long time. The other big change that has really caused confusion is that the credit bureaus are required by law that if there's an item you dispute on your credit, to investigate that item. But the credit bureaus have never complied with federal law. And so that was the major part of the settlement they reached with the state of New York that affects us all over the country. The credit bureaus are going to have to hire and train investigators that when you dispute something on your credit, the credit bureau will actually comply with the law and investigate. Novel concept. But it is so novel, apparently, that the credit bureaus want a phase-in of this requirement that gives them 3 years to fully comply. I don't expect it'll take anywhere near 3 years, but it's not. This is not like I Dream a Genie, you just blink and it happens. This is going to be a process that will take time, but the result is going to be fantastic for you. Now, I have my guide to how you deal with the credit bureaus and how you deal with bill collectors at clarkhoward.com. You have rights. I want you to know what they are and how to use them. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Virginia's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Virginia. How can I be of service to you today?
I am 28 years old. I'm an independent contractor, and I am finally serious about saving for my retirement, but I have no idea what I need to do.
Well, as an independent contractor, you have two major ways you can save for your retirement. One is, and they're both, I'm giving you the two major ways that are super, super easy. One is called a SEP, which is a simplified employee pension that requires about a minute and a half of your time to fill out the paperwork to open an account, a SEP account. And then when you put money in, whatever amount you put in, you get to choose within certain limits. If you have a really good year as an independent contractor and you want to put more money aside for retirement, you can. Let's say you have a year that's tough for you and you can't put any money aside, you have that choice with a SEP. And it reduces how much tax you owe in a year. So that's number one. Then number two is something you may have heard me talk about called a Roth account. Have you heard me mention that term before?
Yes, many times. I listen to you every day.
Okay, so a Roth doesn't give you a current cut on your tax, and you can't have as much money flow into it as you could with the SEP. And you can, with either a SEP or a Roth, you can make the same choices as what you put your money in. And being in your late 20s, Virginia?
Yes.
My favorite thing for you to do if you're starting from the get-go with investing and it's like a lot of confusing terms and all that to you, is just to start off putting your money in the target retirement fund year 2050.
Okay.
And all you have to do is you buy the target retirement fund, and as you go through the decades, the money you've put in will be steadily more conservatively invested on your behalf as you get closer and closer to the years when you might use the money.
Okay. But my thing is, where do I go? Do I go to my credit union?
No, I would go to either a discount stockbroker or a mutual fund company.
Okay.
Now, my favorites, it's like talking about my children, which is my favorite. But when I look at putting money aside into one of these target retirement funds, I have three favorite children. How about that?
Okay.
And I've got links to them, hyperlinks, where you just click at clarkhoward.com. It takes you right to these companies to open an account. One is Vanguard.
Uh-huh.
The second is T. Rowe Price. And the third is Fidelity Investments. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Donna's with us. Donna, you have a teenager who you are rightfully very proud of. Why are you so proud of this teenager, Donna?
Well, because she's mine.
Aww.
She's wonderful. She has taken my husband and followed us by paying herself first. And she has amassed quite a nice savings account. And we would like to know the best place for her to put this money while she attends college.
So while she's been in high school, she has worked part-time or done errands or whatever, and now she has thousands of dollars that she's saved?
She's got more than $1,000.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, it's wonderful. I remember listening to your show maybe 18 months ago. You said something to the effect of if a student will put maybe $1,000 a year into their savings account for 5 years, starting when they're 17 years old, they can be a millionaire by the time they reach retirement age.
Well, you're close, but let me tell you what I've actually said. If a 15-year-old for 7 years puts $2,000 aside per year, that $14,000 will grow to more than $1 million, widely diversified, you know, with how the money's invested, by the time that child would reach retirement.
That's fabulous.
And I have the chart at clarkhoward.com if anybody else would like to see it for motivation for a teenager. And
well,
it's great that you said your daughter learned this from you, which is the best place for a child to learn good money habits is from a parent communicating that to your daughter, as you did, Donna. But the daughter also has to use those two ears.
Yes.
And listen, and she did. And as a result, she has developed what hopefully will be a lifelong habit of saving money.
I hope so.
So the question is this money for savings, or is this that could be used in the next 5 years, or is this money for longer term?
If I remember correctly, I believe you also said at one time that people who put money into a Roth IRA can use that money without tax penalty to purchase their first home.
Actually with a Roth, it's easier than that.
Oh,
the
okay.
money you contribute to a Roth, not any earnings, but the money you contribute can be withdrawn at any time for any reason, tax and penalty free. Only
okay.
your earnings have to remain in the account. But in her case, if she were to put money in a Roth and she decides in her 20s that she wants the money to put towards a house or whatever the reason is, she can withdraw all the money she's contributed and use it for that purpose or any other. Now, my hope is that she instead would say, hey, I really don't need that money, and leave it aside to grow tax-free for retirement. But the thing about the Roth is it gives you the flexibility to do either. And what I'd love for you to do, Donna, I have an assignment for you, okay?
Okay.
I would like for you to sit down with your 17-year-old daughter on the computer and go to my website, clarkhoward.com, go to my investment guide, and you two read my briefing on Roth accounts together and where she might put that money that she has to build for her future. Now, the exception to anything you see there, though, is if this is money she might need, you mentioned college, that she might need to pay for part of her college cost over the next few years, it would be a bad idea to follow any of that advice on my website. Because shorter term, she's a saver, not an investor.
The Clark Regis Moment is a special segment of the show designed to tell you about things going wrong out there, ripoffs, whatever, so that you will be aware and be out of harm's way. Today's Clark Regis Moment is something that I am so furious about, I cannot
stay calm.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clark Regis moment.
I am incensed beyond the pale. I am so grateful and thankful to the brave men and women of our U.S. volunteer military, all volunteer, who have put their lives on the line for our freedom over these last 14 years since the terrorist attacks struck us in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania. And as we have discovered, some people are starting to come to the realization this is a multi-generational fight we're going to be in. And we should be so, so appreciative of the people who have sacrificed so much for us. But for some reason, many of our nation's banks have behaved hideously, reprehensibly towards our brave men and women. There are laws on the books that first started, I think, in the 1930s and have morphed over the years that require protections for soldiers, known generally as the Service Members Civil Relief Act, that a soldier, when he or she is deployed overseas, that interest rates on loans are reduced, that repossessions of cars can't take place, that evictions of family members left behind cannot happen, foreclosures are not supposed to take place, and one bank after another thumbed its nose on the laws of the United States and spit on these brave men and women while they were deployed and took away their cars, charged them interest rates they weren't allowed, and on and on. And I've told you about this over the years, but now I have an update that makes it even worse. Several of the nation's big banks require that you go through arbitration for anything that happens with them and that you waive all rights to the courts. And the courts have steadily interpreted that the banks don't even have to suffer penalties in court for violating the Service Members Civil Relief Act and repoing people's cars and the such. And the banks hide behind the arbitration and essentially steal from these brave men and women. It is unbelievably Clarkrageous. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start naming bank by bank that has been absolutely, brutally mistreating people. There's a new government study that finds that the big banks have violated the law more than 15,000 times. 15,000 times spitting on these brave men and women. So bank by bank, you're going to know who the slime are. And saying unpatriotic, got to be careful using that term. I feel like saying it, but I just want to always be careful saying that. The nation's largest bank, Chase Bank, is using this slimy way to rip off soldiers and then hide behind the skirts of stack deck kangaroo court arbitration. Shame on you, Chase Bank. Others to be named later. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show.
Okay, you hear advertisers giving out promo codes all the time, but how are you supposed to remember them? Online codes and coupons are great for saving at stores where you shop, but nobody has the time to look for them or remember to use them. That's why you need the app from RetailMeNot. With RetailMeNot, you get thousands of coupons from 50,000 stores all in one place, like Kohl's, Domino's, Best Buy, and a whole bunch more, with amazing deals, like 60% off, free shipping, and free gifts with purchase. And right now, you can get yourself a text invite to download the free RetailMeNot app. Just text the word BUSINESS to 42767. Then you can just redeem your coupon right from your phone whenever you're checking out. It's that simple. RetailMeNot is the best way to save thousands of coupons on your phone so you can save money all the time. So stop what you're doing and text the word BUSINESS to 42767. You'll get a text with a link to download it, and then you'll never forget another coupon. Remember, text BUSINESS to 42767 right now.
Message and data rates may apply. For terms and privacy, visit RetailMeNot.com.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less. Don't let anybody ever rip you off. Follow me at Facebook.com/ClarkHoward or visit me at ClarkHoward.com. So, of the plastic you have in your wallet, if you're a longtime listener, you know that by far the most dangerous plastic you carry is the piece of trash fake Visa or fake MasterCard. A debit card with the Visa or MasterCard logo on it that can be used anywhere Visa and MasterCard are accepted and are extremely vulnerable to account takeover thieves who, with the possession of your number, can empty your checking account willy-nilly. And then you have to fight with your own bank to get your own money back with checks bouncing all over the place. And the security on the debit card has been pathetic. So something that's been going on in other countries is now starting to appear here in the United States. A Canadian bank that's big in the Midwest, Harris Bank, is implementing a technology where instead of you using an ATM card that's so vulnerable to the skimmers and all the scammers, you have a Harris Bank app on your phone. You are identified by your thumbprint in many cases, but you have a special one-time use code on your phone to withdraw money from an ATM to use the equivalent of the ATM card. And it virtually eliminates the possibility of you being defrauded in your account in the old-fashioned way with the very, very ineffective debit card. So I'm thrilled about this. Something I want you to know, though, if you're not aware about how unbelievably dangerous the ATM card is and the havoc it can cause in your life, but you love the convenience of it, the smartest thing to do is to have a walking around account and your main account. So you have your main account that you pay all your key bills through. And then you have a separate account tied into your debit card that's for your walking around. If you like using a debit card instead of a credit card, the only money that would be at risk is the money that a criminal would steal out of your walking around money account. And your main checking account would still be secure and safe. It's not a foolproof system. It just limits the damage that the crooks can cause havoc in your life. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Bill is with us. Bill, you're interested in buying a luxury car. Is that right, Bill?
Yes, that's right. I recently inherited a sizable chunk of money, and my wife had been saving up and saving, and had saved about $8,000 to purchase her dream car for her our retirement. And then we got this, and now I'm wondering if I should use my inheritance and just buy it in cash, or if it would be smarter to save the money, especially in this current environment where credit is really going to be tight, and just make payments on it, which would
well,
be
the... Here's how I'd make that decision. If are you a member of a credit union?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, many credit unions are doing car loans at very favorable rates. If you can get a car loan for your wife's new vehicle, I would borrow the difference between the $8,000 she saved and the cost of the vehicle and take out the loan at a very low rate.
Okay. All right.
What are you getting her?
It's going to be, we're looking at the Mercedes and the Lexus are the two that we look closely at. The one she likes best, and it's probably going to be a Mercedes. She kind of seemed to like that one more.
Well, I would go look at Consumer Reports and look at the reliability records of the Lexus brand and the Mercedes.
Okay.
And if you want to have this vehicle for a long time, I would use the record or repair as something that might tip the balance. If she'd be happy with either product, I think that enjoying a luxury car in your driveway instead of in a repair bay is a much better way to do.
All right. Then that's probably, I think, the Alexa seems to have a better grade.
You know, I haven't looked at, that's out of my price range of vehicle, so I haven't looked to see what the Mercedes or Lexus quality ratings have been on Consumer Reports, but if you're not a subscriber, you can go to the library and look at, you want to look at April is the issue you want to look at, and that's their issue devoted solely to automobiles.
Yeah, we subscribe to that.
Oh, great, great. Well, so pull it out and see which is better in terms of repair quality. That's the one I'd go with, since she likes both. Our number 877-87-CLARK. Brian is with us. And Brian, you were thinking about your future.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear it.
My wife and I actually have two questions. She's not here, so I have to do the questioning. I heard you talk about Zenni for your glasses, but is there any place that you could recommend for contact lens?
You know, contact lenses are so cheap compared to what they used to be. I mean, it's stunning how inexpensive contact lenses are now. Okay. And the warehouse clubs are fantastic for contact lenses. Do you use the warehouse clubs now to get contact lenses?
I have never tried them, but, you know, if I got a trial membership right now with BJ, so I could always, you know, give them a try and see, and if they could give me a good rate.
And I would call, if you live in an area that has Costco and Sam's Club as well, I would call both of them and talk to their optical departments and find out what they charge for their lenses.
Perfect. I could do that.
Because
the second question
you could talk about saving big, big dough on the contact lenses. Do you know the secret of the warehouse clubs? Why they're so cheap?
No.
They have, and Costco is public about this, they have their maximum markup on merchandise in the store of 14%, which is nothing in retail. Now, Sam's Club is owned by Walmart, and they don't disclose, but I have been told that their maximum markup on merchandise in a Sam's Club is 22%. But still, that is a very low markup compared to traditional retail. And BJ's Wholesale, I don't know what their markup policies are.
Okay.
But that's why with something like contact lenses that you can save so much money at the warehouse clubs.
I can do that.
And what's your other question?
My wife and I are coming up next year. We are going to be in a position where we wouldn't have no car notes. You know, knock on wood, we won't have a car note, and we would have our credit cards pretty much down to 30%. Wanted to know, with that extra money that we're coming up on, which is probably going to be in the ballpark of about $500 to $600 a month, what kind of a vehicle could we start to, you know, look into to plan for our retirement, which is going to be, we're pretty much going to be relocating to the Philippines in about 30 years.
Wow. You know, there are lots of Filipino Americans who build a retirement home in the Philippines.
My wife is from there.
Oh, so she's in a position that the income you have goes so far in the Philippines.
God. I mean, it could go very, very far. We've even looked at some properties out there. I mean, you're talking about properties that you're funding your Hollywood. You could pretty much get for, a middle class earning person.
Yeah, it is extraordinary, and the opportunity available. And I know that in the Filipino-American community, there are many people who will buy or build a house in the Philippines decades before it would be needed as a retirement home and have it as an income property through the decades, having a family member who still lives in the Philippines manage it. So it is a common way that Filipino-Americans do save substantial money in retirement. Now, that brings up an interesting thing, and that is that I would want you to save money over these decades in a Roth account.
A Roth account.
And what a Roth account is it's a tax-free account that you and your wife are each allowed to put $5,000 into each year. And the money grows tax-free over these decades moving forward. And then this is the neat part. It is spent tax-free.
Now
here's the part I don't know. Now, tax-free in the United States, I have no idea how the Philippines treats money if you relocate there for retirement, how they would treat money that you would you wouldn't repatriate. You would patriate from the United States to the Philippines, how that money would be taxed in the Philippines.
Okay.
So that would require that your wife, does your wife have any relatives still in the Philippines?
Yes, pretty much a good bit of her family is still there.
So if she has some relatives in the Philippines that have done pretty well financially, they might know somebody who does tax work just to find out how money is treated that is brought over from the United States to the Philippines.
That,
because that is something that my knowledge of that is zero.
That is something we could get because her aunt who lives here has several houses in the Philippines and she pretty much have dual citizenship. So she goes back and forth.
Great. So you have your own built-in expertise.
Yeah, but I just needed yours on. But my question, for Roth IRA, is that something we could do on our own, or do we need an expert?
Oh, you can do it completely on your own. In fact, I have a starter guide to Roth accounts at clarkhoward.com. It's become one of our most popular links on our website because I walk you through how they work. I even take it down to giving you good accounts to put your money into to start one and start to build up wealth. And what I love about the choices I have is they're commission-free, they're easy to understand what your money's in, and you can put money in dribs and drabs each month and build up wealth steadily over time. Our number is 877-87-CLARK, and Aaron is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Aaron. You got a question for me about student loans?
Yeah, student loans. So I'm a registered nurse, but I still have some student loans from my undergraduate degree when I got my bachelor's. And I just recently started going back for my graduate degree to become family nurse practitioner. So why have
you, smart woman.
Thank you.
The demand for your services is gigantic if you become an NP.
Yeah, and I imagine it's only going to get bigger, so.
Yeah, because of the shortage of primary care physicians and pediatric care physicians is so severe in the country and only looking to get more so that nurse practitioners and PAs are absolutely going to be what saves us in the country.
I agree. So that's why I'm doing it. And but, you know, I don't want to get any private loans, obviously, for my graduate degree, so I've just been using federal loans. But they want to offer me more. I only want to cover the cost of tuition, but they're offering me, like, $20,000 more than I need per year. So I wondered if I should take that money and pay off some of my private loans for my undergrad just to kind of convert all my loans into federal.
I love that idea. I've never had anybody ask me that question ever about student loans. The private loans generally have such unfavorable terms that getting rid of them is a great idea. Now, I said generally, do any of your private loans have low fixed interest rates or do they all float?
No, they're variable. They've all stayed in the 2% range. you know, I pay extra and I pay on time every time. So I haven't seen any variation upward on my interest rate. Most of them are sitting around 2.1% right now.
Well, that's because they were set on indexes based on, I think, the 10-year treasury. Is that, does that ring a bell with you?
I think so, yeah.
So as the interest rates rise that the private student loans are based on, the interest rates you're charged could go up quite a bit. But if you are only at 2-point-something percent, borrowing more under the federal program to wipe out the private loans would not be a good choice at this point, because the federal loans carry rates, is it 6.8 or 7.5 for what you...
6.8 right now.
6.8 for what you'd take out. So you'd be trading in a 2% variable for a nearly 7% fixed. So I think you can... how much more time do you have in graduate school?
Well, I just started, so I have 2 more years left.
Oh, so just ride with this for a while. If you see the interest rates starting their creep up on the private loans, then go ahead and use your borrowing authority under the federal program beyond what you'd need for the master's program, and use that money towards the private student loans. But I wouldn't jump the gun with those being at such a low rate right now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for the advice. You know, student loans just get really hairy, and I hate to have to do it, but sometimes you have to.
Well, also, depending on what you do when you go out into practice, you may be eligible for some amount of federal student loan forgiveness as you go through your career.
Yeah, because I know the federal ones have, if you make 120 on-time payments, after 10 years, the rest gets forgiven. And there's also the National Student Loan Repayment Program that, you know, I could try and work for an underprivileged or understaffed area and get up to 65% paid off. So I've looked into that because a lot of the hospitals and healthcare systems where I work actually qualify, surprisingly. So that makes
even a stronger argument for you eventually morphing these loans into government loans instead of private. But yeah. I wouldn't do it today, but probably within the next year. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so much for the advice.
I
appreciate it.
Hope you enjoy your advancement in your career. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show.
You know, most people listen to this show wanting to learn about finances and how they can navigate their own personal economic growth. Well, investments can play a key role, but it's really important to have the right skills. The Great Courses offers an engaging lecture series on understanding investments, taught by Duke University professor Connell Fullenkamp. He introduces the fundamentals of investing to beginners, as well as helping to broaden and deepen the knowledge of more experienced investors. The Great Courses, celebrating their 25th anniversary, has over 500 courses on various topics, including business, science, history, and better living. You can watch or listen to the courses with DVDs and CDs. You can stream them, there are digital downloads, or you can use the Great Courses app. And right now, the Great Courses has a special offer just for you. Order from 8 of their best-selling courses, including Understanding Investments, and get up to 80% off the original price. But this 80% savings is only available for a limited time, so do it today. Order now. Go to thegreatcourses.com/value. That's thegreatcourses.com/value.
I'm glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about empowerment with knowledge that helps you keep more of what you make. You're on the Clark Howard Show at clarkhoward.com. We have the website, and the show is each other's companions. Information you hear on the show in greater depth on the website, ideas from the show that you may have missed a website or whatever, you can follow that on the web. And on the web also, the ability for you to post a question for me. We call it an Ask Clark. And if you feel like you need to guide me, we have a forum called Clark Stinks, where you can let me know that I'm out of line, off base, just not together. Once each week, Krista, our executive producer, goes through your Clark Stinks posts and shares some of them with you right here on the air.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
So So, Krista, what you starting with today?
I am going to begin with a response to another Clark Stinks that we read recently. Please refrain from heeding the advice the person gave to utilize female executor. You are an intelligent, gracious person who utilizes vocabulary where the opportunity to better one's awareness is warranted. If this person prefers to be common, shame on him, but please don't stoop to his level.
That was specifically about me using the term executrix.
Yep.
Or when a woman is handling someone's will.
Correct. Okay. Clark, I've been listening to you for years. When you start to talk about technology, you generally stink. You pushed me over the edge with your latest discussion of Apple Pay. While you may be right about the need to turn it off due to the level of fraud, you are dead wrong about pinning it on Apple. The hole exists because of the lack of adequate verification of the owners of the cards by the issuer. Apple can't fix that. They don't own or control the credit card companies. But I generally like listening to you. If you want to tell people how to find the best deals on technology products, go for it. But if you want to supply analysis on anything technology related, please, please, please hire an expert because you are not at all qualified. Frankly, you give bad advice with the best intentions due to your ignorance in the area. Unfortunately, I can't recall an exact example for you, but you have given bad information with the best of intentions that, if followed, hurt the people you're trying to help. Please hire an expert to consult with before talking about technology.
Well, thank you for that criticism. On the issue with Apple Pay, I think you missed part of what I said, and there's nothing about the fraud problems with Apple Pay that should keep you as an iPhone user from signing up for Apple Pay. The fraud involves specifically people having problems who don't even carry iPhones, or if they carry iPhones, they haven't even signed up for Apple Pay. It's a pretty complicated system of fraud that was developed that both Apple and the banks missed. And yes, I should have said it's a shared responsibility for all the fraud that's occurring of Apple and the banks, not just Apple alone. So for neglecting to pick on the banks too, that's true. I was wrong. I should have mentioned that. But I pick on banks enough anyway.
Okay, questionable whether this one's really about you stinking, but here you go. First, I absolutely love you, Clark. I've been listening the big over-the-road UPS truck out of Portland, Oregon for over 36 years at about 100,000 miles per year and listen to every podcast while I'm driving, so I know your stuff. But I think I have a situation you've not touched on. This is the smelly part. You recommended Citi Double Cash Card, so I immediately upgraded to it with a $10,000 limit since this would be our primary card, and I wanted to up it to $25,000, the same as our Amex. I knew we would have to thaw our credit, so I called to ask to see what credit bureau they use because it costs $10 each. They told me Equifax. I thawed and called back and again went through the process, and it didn't go through because the first person was incorrect. It was really Experian. This is the really stinky part. The rep said, I can raise it to $1,600 now until you call back. Great. I called back the third time.
I mean, $16,000.
It says $1,600 okay. On here. I called back the third time and another $10 plus tax, and they took my stellar credit score over 800, and they have to reject me because they are only allowed to raise your credit limit every 6 months. Needless to say, I'm not as Clark smart as I thought. Please, please let others know about this. They do not have to go through this stinky situation like I did. As always, still your fan.
Yeah, that really is more about Citibank in this case, and it's been a terrible problem that the banks have not trained their employees what credit bureau they're accessing. And as credit freeze becomes more and more prominent, the number of people doing it in the millions now, as I understand, the credit card companies and the banks have got to get with the program and make sure that when they're contacted by somebody who has credit freeze, that they can answer that question, which bureau are you accessing, so that you only have to thaw that one. And most states, you don't have to pay to thaw your credit, only to originally freeze it. But there are still states that require a fee for a freeze or a thaw, and the bank just shrugs its shoulders and costs you money. That's not okay.
Generic drugs at Costco. I don't know about all Costcos, but the one where I shop does not honor $4 generic prescriptions like Walmart and others do, thereby making Costco more expensive for those medications.
That's correct. The deal is Costco uses a standard formula that is 14% over cost. So the $4 prescription drug programs, which I love, and you should print out the list from Target or Walmart or whoever, that you take those with you to your doctor, you will find that that's just a no-brainer. You go, the doctor writes a script that's a $4 script at one of the discount stores. You just go and fill that script and don't deal with Costco in that situation.
A couple of months ago, after years of listening to you yammer about praising...
What does yammer mean?
Yammer, it's like yammer on. You know, you're just yammering on.
I talk
on.
Too much.
I love that word. After years of listening to you yammer about freezing my credit, I finally followed your advice. Now I need a copy of my 1040 from a previous year, and I can't get it because my credit is frozen. No problem, you say? Well, Experian never sent me my password to unfreeze my credit, and I can't reach them by phone or email. Now I wish I had never followed your advice.
Wow. So when you freeze your credit, if you set up the freeze online, your code is issued to you at the time you freeze your credit. So I don't really follow, unless maybe you lost your freeze code or you did it somehow the old-fashioned way through snail mail.
That is something that keeps coming up in our Consumer Action Center, that you have to make sure you put those pins in a really safe place. Clark,
one suggestion I had, if you're an international traveler, that you put your three PIN codes with your passport, because you probably put your passport in a safe place. You should treat your PIN codes the same as your passport.
Or upload them to a Dropbox on a file, or, you know, some kind of air storage. Okay, Clark, mentioning the Affordable Care Act supplements and not cautioning your listeners about the financial disasters awaiting them if they earn $1 more than the cutoff number is not up to your normal high standards. A small raise during the year could cost a family thousands at tax time.
That is true. With the way it's estimated for the subsidies, if you get an Obamacare policy and you get a big raise at work or a new job with more money, you could get hit with sticker shock when you go to do your return that disallows a portion or a significant amount of the subsidies that you were eligible for based on your estimate of income that turned out to be wrong on the upside.
I don't really think you stink, Clark, but when I heard you talking today about the benefits of a dry sauna for men's health, I was taken back to my college statistics class. The one thing I remember 30-plus years later is that correlation is not causation. Just think about it. I bet the majority of men who use dry saunas frequently are active members of health clubs. You might even find that those same men are more health conscious in regards to eating. While the use of the dry sauna may correlate to healthier men, I'm not sure you can determine the sauna as the cause of health. Perhaps the active lifestyle is more of a contributor.
I accept that. You know, anytime anything comes up in medicine, what is accepted as fact ends up later on being oops. Like right now, we went through, how long did we go through? Two generations where eggs were supposed to be an evil thing in your diet. And now it's like, oh, well, maybe eggs really are good for your diet. So I accept that, especially as someone with no medical or science background.
The other week, I heard Clark speak to a child of an older couple. One was a veteran while the spouse was not. They were discussing burial options for the parents when the time comes. One option Clark did not suggest was the non-veteran spouse and dependents can be buried with the veteran spouse if they are buried in a national cemetery. The VA burial benefits page explains the specifics.
Thanks for that. Thank you. I didn't know that.
Clark, I listened to a podcast of a recent show in which you helped a caller compare a quote from another company with a quote from USAA. You came to the right recommendation, but failed to mention two important advantages of USAA. USAA is a member-owned company, so its profits go back to its members in the form of dividends, which are applied to future premiums. When one looks at a quote from USAA, it is the gross premium before the application of dividends. After the first year, the amount due from the insured is reduced by the amount of dividends. In addition to that, the USAA pays into a subscriber account, which will benefit the member in the future. Members who stay with USAA for a long time receive significant payments payments from their subscriber account. This year, I got more than $450 back from my account. Over the 50-plus years I've been a USAA member, I have comparison shopped many times. When the dividends and subscriber account benefits are considered, no one beats USAA.
Well, first, thank you for your service to our country and our armed forces. And second, if you go with USAA or Amica Mutual, either of the two top-rated insurers, each is, as a mutual, giving the benefits back from good claims experience back to the policyholders. What kind of money do you get, Krista? Because you're still Amica, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. I get hundreds.
Hundreds each year?
Mm-hmm. Clark, you most certainly don't stink. You just smell a little. You have been talking about the joys of having an electric car and even saying the Nissan Leaf is a great buy used at $10,000. But what you haven't told me or any of your other loyal listeners is how much does owning an electric car truly cost? You've talked about other cars having a price per mile on it. I was wondering how that correlated to an electric car. The $10,000 Nissan Leaf sounds like a screaming deal, but will it be something I regret after I have to buy the stuff to be able to charge it and whenever the battery dies and I have to replace it? Give us a little more info, Clarky. Thanks, Chris.
Chris, Clarky says if you have a Nissan Leaf long enough and the batteries croak, you're probably going to want to leave it by the side of the road like you would with any other older clunker. The cost of operating an electric car per month, typical owner works out to be about $15 a month for the energy. You compare that to the cost of gasoline. The charging stations used to be a zillion bucks. Now you can buy those for about $500. But what's really interesting with the charging is inventive people are coming up with new devices that allow people to charge an electric car a whole lot cheaper for the actual charging station itself, and the cost of that is dropping like a rock.
Clark, you're great, but your suggestion that a lady who bought a $2,000 gold-plated washer and dryer was to pay $4 for an internet connection to Consumer Reports and see what they recommended didn't go far enough. You should have mentioned that a lot of libraries have copies of Consumer Reports going back several years. You're still the great one since Jackie Gleason died. I tune into KRLD in Texas and catch you as often as I can about five times a week. My wife is beginning to wonder what the attraction is. Encoder Charlie.
Thank you for that. You can let me know how I'm stinking it at clarkhoward.com. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Alex is with us on the Clark Howard Show. How are you doing?
Hi, good afternoon.
So you're on the path to paying off your debt. That must feel good.
Yes, it is a sacrifice. It is a hard process, but we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, so we're happy about that.
What kind of mess have you dug yourself out of? Like, how bad was it when you got really down to work?
We probably had about $7,000 to $8,000 in credit cards. We have a couple car payments and student loans.
And now you're at a point that you're going to be debt free across that wide sweep of debts, or you're getting to a point that it's manageable?
It's been manageable. We're enjoying a good income right now, so we're happy about that, and that's been helpful.
Well, great. How can I be of help then? Because it sounds like you're on a really good path.
Yes, my question is, we finished paying all the credit card debt we have, and after we did that, we closed all the accounts. We felt like we didn't want to use credit in the future, trying to save some cash to buy things when we need to and live with that mentality. Now, when we supposedly will be done with our car payments and we won't be reporting anything else to our credit bureaus.
Right, and that's, believe it or not, that's a problem. It's a crazy problem because I'm so glad in living a cash existence when you know that credit gets you into trouble is a great thing. But then is how you look to people who are banks and anybody else who lend you money. If you have no credit, then they put you in a penalty box almost as if you have too much or bad credit.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend, while you still have the car loans outstanding, you're still showing active credit, you paid off all the debts, is that you do get one credit card back, a Visa or MasterCard, but put it away. Only use it like twice a year, maybe on one of your birthdays and then at Christmas time. Just one purchase of any small amount, and then it will keep that active in what they call your credit mix and will show you with good credit, which is very important because no credit, even though it'll be great to be on a cash basis, it's got to look like, even though you're living a cash basis, you still have credit, which I know is really goofy, but I want to congratulate you on getting this under control, getting all that credit card debt paid off, getting the car loans paid off, and just having the student loans left to tackle. Good for you. This is the Clark Howard Show.
Hi there, podcast listener. We know you love this podcast because you're listening right now. So we want to tell you about a simple way to support the podcast. Amazon.com. That's right, Amazon, the one you use all the time. You see, just by using Amazon, you can help support the podcast and keep it free by offering this show a small commission on the products that you purchase. There's no extra cost for you either. So the next time you need to buy an item on Amazon, go to podcastone.com and click on the Keep It Free banner. It's located at the top of the homepage. Then click right on the show banner, and you'll find Amazon as well as all the other wonderful sponsors that help support this program. You see, you do something for yourself, and it helps us help you. It works. One more time, go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep It Free banner to support Amazon and all the wonderful sponsors that help make this show possible. Thanks. And now, for being such a patient listener, we'll go right back to the show.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anybody ever rip you off. So, our web address, clarkhoward.com, full of great information for you. And in just a few weeks, we'll be launching the newest edition of clarkhoward.com. Very exciting update to the website. In particular, it will make looking at our information much easier for you on your mobile device, on your smartphone or your tablet. And on Facebook, you can follow me at facebook.com/Clark Howard. So one thing we've noticed as a trend over the years is I've been on the air 28 years, and probably the first 15 years of those 28, I was virtually never, ever asked a question about investing. This is not an investing show. But the number of questions that are posed to me about investing have grown enormously because today so few of us have pensions, and we're responsible for saving for ourselves. And for many of us, all the lingo and all the stuff involved with investing gets intimidating, or it's boring, or it's overwhelming. So it makes us susceptible to people who say they've got the magic answer. One of the things I want you to know is that over the years, the simplest things with investing almost always are best. There's something called index funds, which you'll hear me talk about from time to time, where instead of trying to pick the winning investment, you just buy an index fund, the most popular of which is called a 500 index fund, which owns little pieces of the 500 largest companies in the country. And so if you buy that 500 index fund, you own little pieces. You're a mogul. You own little pieces of 500 different companies. I prefer a different one as your main holding, the total stock market index or broad market index, where you own little pieces of big companies, mid-sized companies, small companies, pretty much all companies that have publicly traded stock. I love these things because if you have them in an investment account, the tax treatment's very good on those, lousy on mutual funds. If you have them in a retirement account, the big advantage is the expenses you pay to be in one of these index funds is like nothing versus the huge expenses you pay to be in a mutual fund. But here's the shocker. I have two stories in front of me, one from Kiplinger Personal Finance, another from the New York Times, both about why index funds over time do so much better than mutual funds. Even if a particular mutual fund does well for a year or does well for a three-year period, even a five-year period, the longer you have your money invested, the worse the mutual funds are going to do because of the expenses they have, and especially in a taxable account, the lousy tax treatment you have in mutual funds. So I'm a big believer with investing, particularly if it's intimidating or boring, keep it simple. I have done something that was something I was basically backed into by the questions I get, realizing I needed to give a simple guideline to you. So I have a very simple investment guide at clarkhoward.com that is something that in less than 10 minutes, you can get started with investing in your retirement. I want you to take control, and I want you to understand it doesn't have to be complicated. It's very easy. You start by spending less than what you make, and then over time, the money will grow and grow and grow. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Michael's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Michael.
I have a two-part question for you. Since I'm not working a lot right now, I'm considering doing these online surveys, and I need to know if these online surveys are legit and how should I be getting paid.
All right.
If it's safe.
Sadly, most of what you see out there with the online surveys are not legit. You have to be very, very cautious. There have been problems in two areas with them. One is where you, in some way, at some point, are asked to pay money, and the other has involved identity theft.
Hmm.
So it's a minefield getting involved in doing any kind of surveys for merchandise is what they usually offer, in rare cases, money.
Yes.
Now, what we have done for people who are underemployed or unemployed or looking for stuff they can do part-time from home is we put together a work-at-home guide of, as best we've been able to vet, legitimate opportunities on clarkhoward.com.
I've already been there, and I signed up for the one that was on your website already. I've already gone there, and I look for different articles to find out on clarkhoward.com, and it didn't have a lot of stuff. That's the reason for my call today, because...
Well, the reason there's not a lot there is because there's very little true opportunity in this area.
Mm-hmm.
It is, sadly, mostly people trying to take advantage of you.
Okay, well... If I do sign up for some, and the way that it works is you do a bunch of surveys for them. If you build up enough money, they will pay you a certain way, and I'm not supposed to mention the name on air, but I just wanted to find out.
Oh, pay you by PayPal?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to say it, but I guess I am.
But that is what the pitch is, and I have not heard from anybody that they really got the money through PayPal that they were told they'd get.
Is PayPal safe?
Yeah, PayPal is safe. I mean, there are scams that operate where people use PayPal as a vehicle to scam you. But
right. Where
you have to be careful is with spoof sites, where they get you to link your checking account for the supposed deposit of money
right. Through
PayPal, and it's not really PayPal's site, and you've ended up giving a criminal access to your checking account.
Right, I would never do that. There was just this one site that where she does, you know, these surveys, and she gives you a list of the different surveys that pay that much, and she says, of course, that they're 100% legit, but she may, of course, be benefiting.
Yeah, it's hard to know, and that's why, Michael, this is an area I can't give you an absolute green light or red light. This is an area that calls for a very, very big yellow light, a very big caution light.
Okay.
So proceed with great caution and skepticism.
Okay.
What was your second question for me?
That was my second question.
Oh, okay.
You answered it about the way that I would be getting paid, because most of these places, they will pay you by the aforementioned company that you just mentioned.
PayPal, yeah. So you've just got to be careful that you really are at the real PayPal website and not something that looks like PayPal. Krista, if I go to the address bar, how would I best be sure that I'm at the real PayPal versus a spoof site?
I can't give you a foolproof way, but I would go to PayPal separately. If you have your own PayPal account, you can have them send a bill to your PayPal account.
That's exactly
right.
So
you log in there.
That's exactly right, Michael. Did you follow that, what Krista said?
PayPal.com.
Yeah, you set up your own PayPal account, and that would be how they would supposedly pay you instead of you, through their link, creating a supposed PayPal account.
Yes, so actually you would send them an invoice, I guess, is the way it would work.
Right. Good job. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Mario is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Mario.
Hi, how you doing, Clark?
Great, thank you. How can I serve you today?
I was calling because me and my wife were receiving income from a lawsuit, and it's a substantial amount. And we wanted to know, prior to us getting married, I had my house, and she had hers. We kept both of them, and I also have rental property. We're trying to figure out what is the best thing to do as far as, do we pay off both of our houses?
Well, let me ask you some questions. First, if you are receiving money from a lawsuit, that means something bad happened to one or the other of you. I'm sorry about that, and I hope things are okay now.
Getting there.
Okay. Second, do you know how much of the funds you're going to receive are subject to tax?
My understanding is there should be no tax penalty on
receiving this money.
Correct.
You should, before you would commit to something like taking money from a settlement and paying off a mortgage or anything like that, and then that money's not there anymore,
mm-hmm.
I would strongly recommend that you take the settlement language itself. You know, you'll have a settlement agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Take it to sit down for, may take a half hour, an hour, with a CPA who does tax or an enrolled agent, and let them give you a verdict, because they're the only ones that can give you a true verdict on whether or not any of it's going to be subject to tax, because you may have to be prepared for that.
All right.
In some settlements, this is going to sound crazy to you, but in some settlement circumstances, the money that the lawyer gets is his or her cut.
Right.
You can, in rare circumstances, be taxed on that money as what they call phantom income, even though you didn't receive it. So that's why that's the first order of business, is to see if there is any tax bill or burden that will come with receiving this money. Second, on the issue of taking it, it's enough money for you to pay off both mortgages?
Yes.
Wow. All right. What's the interest rate on each of the mortgages?
Both of them are 5.5. 5.5, 30-year fix.
5.5% loans. First pass, I'd say, barring something else that I might determine talking to you, it would be a great idea to just wipe out the mortgages.
Okay.
Because there's nothing right now that I can say, hey, go put your money in, you'll get 5.5% guaranteed.
Okay.
And so you'd have that instant guaranteed return. How old are each of you?
I'm 31. My wife is 32.
Okay. So being mortgage debt free would be kind of nice, not having that debt. And you don't have to worry about the money burning a hole in your pocket and deciding, wouldn't it be nice to do this, that, and the other?
Yeah.
What other things are there going on in either of your lives that might be a higher priority than being mortgage debt free?
The only thing is my wife is finishing up her doctorate in education. So besides that, I still own two of my rental properties.
Okay, and you have mortgages on both of those?
No, one of them is mortgage free,
and the other one, what interest rate does that mortgage carry?
That one, as a part of the settlement, has to be paid for.
Oh, okay, all right. So that won't exist. All right. Now, your wife getting her doctorate, does she have any private student loans?
No private, all federal.
All right. So, with all those things having been asked of you, are you gainfully employed?
Yes, I am an investor, so I buy.
And
you generate
enough income for the two of you to live on?
Between both of our incomes, yes.
Okay, in that case, you're fine to zero out the mortgages. It clears the decks really well for both of you going forward. The federal student loans that she'll have from her doctorate carry usually generally pretty favorable interest rates, and it will be to her advantage. Is she going to stay in education, or what's she going to do?
She'll stay in the education realm. Whether she stays in public, I don't know, but she'll stay in the education realm.
The reason that's a significant question is she may be eligible for income-based repayment that after 10 years based on profession, the remainder of those loans for her doctorate will be forgiven. So again, it circles back to getting rid of that mortgage being a great priority. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Amy is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Amy, you have a fresh warning for your fellow listener about a wrinkle on a scam that's been causing misery for people for a long time. How are you?
I'm fine, Clark. Two nights ago, I'm a small restaurant owner, and we received a call from a TYY relay service.
Oh.
For the deaf.
Yes.
And the call was accepted by one of my restaurant managers, and this individual requested, they wanted to purchase 150 entrees from our restaurant, basically for a catering order for an upcoming party. They were interested in giving us their credit card number. We're prepared to pay for it over the telephone. She indicated that she had recently been diagnosed with cancer and wasn't going to be able to attend the event, but wanted to go ahead and pay for that, and that she wouldn't be picking the food up, but a delivery service would be picking up the food. And by the way, could we add a $1,280 charge to order when we process their credit card? Because the delivery service did not have the ability to process credit cards, could we then in turn Western Union or MoneyGram $1,280 to this delivery company?
Amy. You know what's funny? You were only the second restaurateur who has ever called me on this scam.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And most often it hits caterers, not restaurateurs.
Yeah.
But let me take it back in a circle that will be very illuminating for people. The TTY service is a special federal program that has been abused by criminal elements around the world for a long time. It is an effort that was originally designed to provide communication ability over the phone to people who are unable to communicate. They are deaf. So what happens is they have a machine, and they supposedly, and the TTY operator for free transmits the information for them. And it is a world-class kind of scam going on with the TTY. The thing that you pointed out is how the criminals have figured out how to scam the restaurant business. They don't even care about the food, obviously.
Right,
and
right.
What they want is they want the money wired, and whatever the credit card number that you run is a stolen card.
Mm-hmm.
The card comes back as a chargeback against the restaurant or the caterer,
mm-hmm.
and whatever money has been Western Union is gone forever.
Right.
So I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's been so long. I think it goes back to 2008, one and only time I had a call from someone in your industry who was putting out a shout-out about this scam.
Wow. I would imagine that they target smaller restaurant owners simply because they have access to banking, you know, the bank records, and they can actually have the ability to wire money, whereas the larger restaurants would never allow a manager, you know, to
wouldn't
wire.
Have the authority. That's right.
Correct. Yeah. So
well, I'm so glad that everybody had their early warning system up and you stayed out of harm's way. This is the Clark Howard Show.
Thanks for listening to the Clark Howard Podcast. Download new episodes every Monday through Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.